Vicious Moreno, actually.
Well, the reason for the title is not really to indicate what I'm going to talk about, because I'm going to talk about vegetables which are not insect-free. Insect-free vegetables is a bit of a misnomer, because there isn't really such a thing. But what led me to think about that terminology was when I was buying a packet of celery sticks in Kosher Kingdom, and it's labelled in bold letters, not insect-free. Now, if I buy something in a shop which says not insect-free, then I would assume it has insects in it. I mean, that's what in plain English it means, although they intend the terminology to be in contrast to other vegetables which are produced under strict control conditions where they claim that they are insect-free. But really, you can't have it both ways, because you will find there are occasionally insects in insect-free vegetables. Although they're under controlled conditions, they get in, they might fly in afterwards or whatever. And in the same sense, you will get many vegetables which are not grown under controlled conditions, which are insect-free. You will rarely find insects on tomatoes or in watermelons. However, there are some vegetables which are very common in giving problems of infestation. Lettuces, for example, raspberries, strawberries, Brussels sprouts. There are some vegetables which the kashrus authorities will not allow caterers to use at all. So what are we actually going to try and achieve today? Because it's quite a vast subject. What we're going to look at today is not how to check vegetables. There are time around on that. We're going to look at certain principles involved as to whether there is a duty to check and the occasions where it's impossible to check, and are there any criteria upon which we can rely in order to eat certain foods which are impossible to check. For checking purposes, Rabbi Falgu Gateshead has produced a very good work on how to check various vegetables. There is also in English a sefer by Rav Moshe Vaya called Bedikas HaMozon, based on his Hebrew work in three volumes, Bedikas HaMozon Kahalocha, with lots of interesting illustrations, photographs. But we're not really dealing with that now. We will be here till 12 o'clock tonight and still not finished if we look at how we check various vegetables. If we create an awareness, fine. But in background, there's in Pasuk in Shiach Shirim, in chapter 2, verse 9, Mashpiach min hachalonos. Hashem watches what's going on in the world through windows, and he peeps through cracks. And Rashi there says this refers to the Shibud Mitzrayim, which we're busy reading about at the moment in the Sedras of the Week. This refers to our slavery in Egypt, that Hashem was watching us carefully. Ro'o ro'isi. So in the same way that Hashem looks in such a manner, we must also be vigilant and be careful in what we are eating. And the Peleoet says, no one is going to eat pork. People would rather give up their lives before they eat pork, or a ham sandwich, or whatever. And yet, that is just one Issa D'Oraisa. When you're eating insects, worms or other, whatever, what we call shirotzim, you may be committing five Issa D'Oraisa, even six. So that would be five or six times worse than eating your ham sandwich. And the Ben Ishchai writes about how he saw a lady on Erev Pesach going through lettuces, just giving a cursory glance at each leaf. And he asked her, how many hairs do you have on your head? And she said, what are you talking about? I can't count the number of hairs on my head. And he said, well, he said, the number of Issurim you might be committing by not checking that lettuce properly will be greater than the number of hairs on your head. And those are Issurim D'Oraisa. She shrugged and she said, well, what can I do? I have a large family. They like lettuce. He said, that's not going to be an answer for you. And nowadays, you might wonder why it might be stressed more than maybe our grandparents stressed it, but we have the additional problem because of imports and exports, where we had not originally anticipated problems, they come about more easily because of various creatures which come into countries which were not previously known. And Rafalk did such extensive research that he discovered one creature which had no name to it because scientists did not know of its existence. So they've named it the Falk Worm. Anyway, this sefer does in fact give a key of various vegetables where they are usually infested, muchzak betoloim, where you've got two red stars. Then you've got vegetables or fruits which have a little blue star, which is sometimes infested, and it gives that the expression of miot hamotsoi. And then you've got a little green star for really infested. And what he does is he's got 6 or 7 different columns for different countries. Because in Israel, it's not the same as the USA, which is not the same as England or France or Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, South Africa or Russia. So that's an interesting table where it sums up, where is it muchzak? So there are 3 issues here. Muchzak means there is a general presumption that there is infestation. And for that, we're meaning more than 50%. Then you've got miut she motsoi and miut she eino motsoi. Miut hamotsoi is when there is a reasonable chance that you will find something, although it's a relatively smaller chance. And then miut she eino motsoi is it's very rare. So there are different aspects relating to those 3 categories. Now, the subject of our talk today is insect-free vegetables, and it has become very prevalent on the market to find shredded cabbage, lettuces, and other vegetables with carrots, where they say that they are guaranteed free from infestation. They are grown under controlled conditions. It started in Gush Katif when we were still in Gaza, and they built special greenhouses for this, and it created a kind of revolution for people. Wow, you know, this is fantastic. Because in Erev Pesach, we're so short of time, and now we're given these vegetables where we don't have to worry about checking, although there is something written on it in the small print. There is some minimal checking required. Why do they write that? Because even if it comes in the category of miut she'eino motsoi, of the 3rd category where it's not likely, they will never say guaranteed 100% there are no infestations. Just last year, in June 2012, Rav Shlomo Amar, the Sfardi chief rabbi of Israel, issued quite a long written declaration to warn people about these so-called insect-free vegetables. But his warning was not based on halachic reasons, but on health reasons. He claimed, and I have to say that in his name, not in my name, because I don't want to be sued for libel or slander, but he claimed that the vegetables which they are labeling as insect-free are so heavily soaked in insecticides and pesticides that they present a serious health risk. And by using them regularly, we don't know what harm they might be causing to our health. And he said, why don't we just go back to the old-fashioned way and check them and eat them like our grandparents did. He apparently had some laboratory tests done, and my son actually spoke to somebody who has worked in one of these factories where they produce these packed vegetables, and he admitted to my son, oh yes, we do apply as much insecticide as possible, which the government limits allow, and then we add a bit more. I understand there was even at least one restaurant, which decided to relinquish its kashrus license. An Italian restaurant in Yerushalayim called Topolino, where the mashgiach told them they have to use the Gush Katif lettuce, and they didn't want to simply because of health reasons. They said, we will check them. And they rather refused to carry on with their license. And it's a problem in Israel, because if you write kosher and you don't have a hechsher from a recognized rabbinate, then you're actually breaking the law. So there's some who get around it by saying mahadrin and free from insects and all these other expressions without using the word kosher. But it's become a bit of a controversy in Israel how this revolution of insect-free vegetables has come about. So I have actually found an insect on one of these guaranteed insect-free vegetables, so it's good to watch them. And celery sticks, not such a problem, but you use one of these brushes that you use for washing up under running water, and you give it visual inspection, and you should be okay. And if you look at Rafalk Sefer and others, even the Brussels sprouts, which are considered terrible for this problem, you can actually check them and eat them. So it's not that this time of the year Brussels sprouts are so popular amongst certain sectors of the population, but it's a very nourishing vegetable, and if you can check it, then goes on to height, then you can eat it. The Torah makes us prohibited to eat, digest such insects or chiroptids only when you can see them. It's also only if visible with a good eyesight. And we learn this out from a number of sources. The Binas Odom brings down in Sharis of the Heter, Sifkot Lama Dalud. He talks about clear vinegar. But if you look through that clear vinegar with a microscope, you will see bugs in it. It's not a problem, he says. The Tiferes Yisrael brings down in Avodah Zarah, Perek Beis Mishnah Vav, in the Boaz Ois Gimel. He says there was a certain rabbi who wanted to allow a fish to be eaten, which didn't look as though it had fins and scales. It had fins, but the scales could only be determined by a microscope. So the psak din was, you can't eat that fish because you can only find the scales with a microscope. We regard it as though it doesn't have scales. The Aruch HaShulchan asks in Siman Pei Dalet if Kotan Lamadvov, and also in Pei Gimel Kotaf Tetzvov, he says, how can we actually drink water? Water from the tap. If you put it under a microscope, you'll find loads of thousands of microorganisms, not just bacteria, of moving things which you would not normally wish to eat and which may well come under the issa, but you can't see these with the human eye. And he says, Lo Asra Torah B'masha Eino Ayin Sholetespo. The Torah does not make us forbidden to eat things which the eye can't see. The lowness of the Torah Lamalochim. The Torah was not given to angels. It was given to human beings. And the Torah is not expecting us to use microscopes. If you want to be machmin, you want to be careful, and you don't trust your own eyesight, and it's a long time since you have an eye test, so you wish to use a magnifying glass, very good, okay, talon of bracha. But the general principle is that the Torah does not make you liable for what you can't see. Because if you otherwise bring this to its logical conclusion, you wouldn't be allowed to breathe air when you walk in the street, because you may be inhaling microorganisms which would otherwise have been forbidden. And this is brought down in Igaris Moshe, Simon Kuf Memvov, in Chelek Beis. So, how do we bring this forward? Okay, we know that if it can be verified, even with difficulty, then it's forbidden to eat. And we also know that there are some vegetables which are more prone to a fur infestation than others. So the Shulchan Aruch in Yeredeo, Simon Pei Dalad, says you may not eat such vegetables until they are checked. Those are the ones which are darkon hatlia. So that means they have a chazoka that they do attract insects. Now, where is this din derived from that you have to check? There are certain other times in halacha when you have to check. And the classic example of that is that when a shochet checks an animal, he afterwards checks the lungs. Why does he check the lungs? There could be more than 70 different kinds of issues in the animal which could make it rendered a trefor where there's some pegum where it could die within 12 months, although we use the word trefor as a general idea of non-kosher. So the lungs are the ones which are highest in their chances, whether it had adhesions or holes in them, then the whole animal is regarded as not kosher. So after Shechita, the shochet will take out the lungs. And normally the lungs are okay, in most cases, but it's called miut hamotzoi. There is a regular feature that lungs, well, mind you, once I went to watch Shechita, and that morning they had 18 cows in the abattoir, and they shechted each one, and only six turned out to be kosher, but the shochet told me that was highly exceptional, that only 6 out of 18 cows were kosher, and usually it's only a small number which have lungs which disqualify. But it's easy for them to check lungs, and therefore, let's do it. But there are some things which are very hard to check. In fact, there are some things which are impossible to check, because where the shochet's knife actually cut, it might there be cutting into some mum, some pagam, which you wouldn't have then even be able to establish afterwards. So what do we say? We say chazaka. There is a general presumption in halacha about rov. Rov means the majority. If the majority is okay, then you don't have to worry about it. So you can say, well, if the majority of vegetables are okay, why do I have to bother checking them at all? And the truth of the matter is when it's not a chazaka, namely, if it's less than 50%, more than 50%, then obviously there's a kind of chazaka. If it's less than 50%, then there's no chazaka. Why should you check? The truth is that in a Torah, you don't have to check. It's a din d'rabbanon. It's a rabbinical law. Ah, we still have to treat rabbinical laws with respect and carry them out. But it's important in coming to the conclusion afterwards, what we're going to discuss, certain heterim, to realize that the checking we do for less than 50% is a din d'rabbanon and not a din min haTorah. So we've got the idea of rov, which we say is 50% plus. We got miotamotsoi, we got as a dinderabonon, and we'll discuss in a moment what proportion is miotamotsoi, because there's a bit of controversy about that. And then we got miotchenomotsoi, where you don't really have to bother checking, or minimal checking is required. You know, you'll hold up your tomato and you'll see it's perfectly fine. You won't have to give it too much attention. So the Rashba writes in Chelek Aleph Reisha and Dalad that if we say miot hamotsoi, you cannot rely on checking just some. You have to check everything, just like when you check the lungs of the animal. You should check everything which comes your way. But what is miot hamotsoi? Okay, muchzak we can know, certainly when you buy vegetables, and we're not just talking about lettuces, we're talking about celeries, or cucumbers are certainly are usually okay, but 95% are usually fine. But what is miot hamotsoi? What is this category where we say you do have to check, even though it's not the row, even though it's not the majority? So there's a famous source, Mishkanos Yaakov, who was Rav Kalini, he was a pupil of Rav Chaim Volozhin. And he writes in Yeredea Simon Yozayin, a miot hamotsoi, he says, is 10%. We once discussed this briefly when we spoke about the subject of milk, because there we were asking what the danger is of the cow being a trefor when you take milk from that cow. And we were not talking about Cholav Yisrael or anything like that. When you have Cholav Yisrael, supervised milk, which is taken from a cow, how do you know that that cow is not trefor? So we spoke about the din of miot hamotsoi. Is it 10%? Is it 4%? And we spoke about vaccinations done on animals, and maybe that might render them a trefor. But that was our subject of milk. So the subject relates to milk, the subject relates to lungs, the subject relates to vegetables, and interestingly, the subject also relates to shatnas in clothing. Because if you can establish that out of 100 Marks and Spencer suits, only one or two might have shatnas in them, then maybe you can rely on the principle of rov. I'm asking that as a question. Or do we say, no, there's a miot hamotsoi. There might be an established proportion which does have shatnas, and therefore you should always check them, just like you check the lungs, even though it's not as much as 50%. So what is miot hamotsoi? So the Mishkanos Yaakov relies on a Mishnah in Baba Basra, Perek Rav Mishnah based, which talks about selling wine by the barrel. And not every barrel is proper wine, because some of them have turned into vinegar. So we carry a presumption for terms of validity of the sale that as many as 10% of the barrels might already be going off, might be vinegar, but then it will still be a valid sale and you don't have to claim your money back, so to speak, or you might not be eligible to claim your money back. And that principle he brings forward. Now, this is a bit of a problem, because the Rambam writes in Hilchas Trumas Perikei Alocha Cafe that when you're putting aside wine for Truma, you should check that the wine is not vinegar. But nevertheless, the Mishkanos Yaakov says, I say 10%. So if you have 10% of infestation, then that is a miot hamotsoi. If you have less than 10%, then you don't have to bother so much with checking. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach follows this Mishkanos Yaakov, and he says in Minchat Shlomo Siman Samach Gimel in his second volume that we follow this. But there are others who disagree. Rav Ozna in the Sheva Halevi, he writes in Chelek Dalet Pei Aleph, he says this 10% figure is not a proof. All the Mishkanos Yaakov is doing is quoting a Mishnah where we say 10% is significant. But maybe it's possible that a lesser number is also significant, and that that proof relating to the wine is not enough to say that less than 10% is okay. So
why would a lesser number be significant? Surely the Mishnah would give you the biggest finish.
Yes. But first of all, the rule relating to wine for purposes of sales might not be the same application as relating to kashrus, where there are five or six Isurim d'oraisa. right? Whereas there, it's more like the din of Mekartos, maybe, or something like that. It's not the same category. And therefore, even if 10% of barrels might be vinegar, it still might not logically follow that 7 or 8% with infestation would be okay. That's not necessarily a logical presumption. But the Sheva Alevi is not so happy about that. And Rav Eliashiv wants to go more machmir, and he gives a figure of 4%, and he's quoted in Bich Samoz and Kalocha. And then there are some other opinions. In the kashrus organizations in America, the main ones are the OU, headed by Rav Belsky, and there's also Rav Heidemann of Baltimore. Neither of them rely on a fixed number. They say we don't actually want to have a fixed number. In that way, they're following the Shevet Halevi. And they're saying, look, if it's normal to find insects, like on strawberries, then we will check strawberries. If it's not normal to find insects, like in a watermelon, then we won't check watermelon. And that is their principle. They will always check strawberries, they will always check lettuces, and I spoke to a couple of people who I know who are mashgiachs under the London-based din for catering functions, and I asked them, what are the guidelines you've been given for checking? And they said, we check all lettuces, we do avoid certain vegetables completely. We check dill and parsley and other herbs. 100% we check. And we also check any strawberries, like they put in the desserts, if there are raspberries, but those are more rarely used. And they do a 100% check. Because logically, according to the Mishkan and Siakov, maybe you only need to do a 10% check. Because if you do a 10% check, then you will know if the rest are within the category of miyotamotsu and michainamotsu, even if there is an insect in the remaining 90%, because of the principles of rov, chazaka, and miyotamotsu. So that is the argument regarding miyotamotsu. But there is another big question. What does 1 in 10 mean when we say 10%? Does it mean if you've got 100 crates that you've got to check 10 out of those 100 crates? Or could it mean simply, look, I've got a portion on my plate, and on my plate there's a piece of lettuce, or in my dessert there is a strawberry, so I have to check 10 portions. And there's a huge difference in time and expense, especially when you're talking about such large quantities at major functions, when they might have 1,000 guests at a dinner, you know, are they actually going through the whole lot? So the mashgiachs of certain organizations do rely on certain leniencies because of these principles we've discussed and the sheer mammoth task of checking everything. So what does 1 in 10 mean? The most machmir view which has been brought down is Rav Eliashiv, who says, if I'm buying for a yeshiva and I'm buying crates of vegetables, so he said, if you buy, say, a crate of lettuce, and in that crate there are boxes and there are packets, then I will say that that crate is the 10% of 10 crates, which is massive. You know, you'll be then talking about out of 100 crates, you'll be checking 10 crates. And then that means if you find one bug in 10 of those crates when you buy 100 crates, then that's a miyot hamotzer, and then you have to check the whole lot, which is huge. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he doesn't go as far as Rav Eliashiv. He says, no, that's not correct. He says, in Nichav Shlomo Simon Samach Gimel, in Chelek Beis, he does start talking about one opinion who talks about 10 bytes. Now, we're not talking computer language here when we talk about bytes or megabytes, but bytes of your lettuce. If you take 10 bytes in a lettuce, then one byte in your lettuce is 10%. He says, no, I don't agree with that. That is an opinion of a Rav Mordechai Willig, although he admits that it's halacha lo lemaaseh, but that people shouldn't pass in his way. This 1 in 10 bytes means that if you have 2 bytes to a strawberry, then you go by what's in 5 strawberries for your 100%, which is nothing. You'll never find an insect. Well, you'll very rarely find an insect in such a small number. So he says, I say 1 in 10 means 1 in 10 packets. You have a packet of lettuce, and the packet might have more than one lettuce in it. It might have 2 or 3 lettuces in it. But you go by the packet, because that's the unit in which you buy. So you buy a packet of lettuce, so we will go buy 1 packet in 10 packets. So if you find a bug in 1 packet of lettuce, That means you'll be checking all your 10 packets of lettuce. That's Rav Shlomo Zalman. And it seems many follow Rav Shlomo Zalman. Well, and the same with strawberries. So strawberries get sold in punnets, they call it?
Yeah.
So each one of those constitutes the 1 in 10. So if you find a bug in one packet of strawberries, then you'll check all 10 packets. Well, strawberries is what I'm talking about. You cut off the top.
You buy one punnet, then...
Yeah, but the rule will be 1 in 10 packets.
There's 10 strawberries in the packet.
Right, if there are 10 strawberries in the packet, he will say that that packet is the 10% of 10 packets. So if you buy 10 packets, you will check one of those. If you only buy one packet, we won't say you only have to look at 10% of that one packet. He says the unit of purchase is a packet, therefore the decision is based on one packet in 10.
Is this for each purchase? As in, so let's say I bought one packet,
that's right,
and I checked and there was nothing inside. Then I have 9 I can carry forward.
Well, no, he's saying that if you only buy one packet, we're still going by one packet in 10.
Right.
So that we're assuming that you're buying 10 packets as to whether you should check the whole lot. But if you only buy one packet, then you'll check the whole packet. That's how it works, because you're going by 1 in 10 packets. So the Miut HaMotsoi is a 10%, that whole packet is the 10%. You might say to me, okay, if I buy one packet and I check it, it's completely free, then on the basis of Miut HaMotsoi, I can then buy 9 more packets and I don't have to bother checking them. That in Rav Shlomo Zalman's opinion, may be okay. But the problem with strawberries, and the problem with strawberries is that it gets 2 red stars in this book. So if it's 2 red stars, it's called muchsak. So Miut HaMotsoi doesn't help you. So we're only dealing with those vegetables or fruits where we've established that there's just Miut HaMotsoi and not muchsak, and it's more than 50%. So the danger mark are strawberries. I mean, blackberries, we've got blackberries grown in our garden. I'm very proud of the fact that they're organic, right? But every time I pick one and I look closely, almost every single one, I see a creepy crawly on it, which is very off-putting. But my wife claims she's got a way of checking and getting rid of them and soaking and et cetera, et cetera. But it's so much time and effort, you know, that there may be a way of having these foods without having to check at all, and I'll come into that shortly. Yes.
One time I picked some blackberries and I asked my mum to check if there were bugs. And it turns out they were so full of bugs that we couldn't touch them. We had to throw them out.
Yeah, true. You have to throw them all away. It's a big pity. I understand. But we'll discuss in a moment what can be done to eat these even with minimal inspection. Wait for the next thrilling installment. Thripping installment. Now, the subject bugs me. Now, Rav Moshe Heineman of Star K in Baltimore, and the OU with him, their criteria for Miut HaMotsoi is 1 in 10 portions. That means to say that if a caterer is bringing out a dessert, and on the dessert you've got some ice cream and a pastry and 3 strawberries, then they will say the Miut HaMotsoi is based on 1 portion out of 10, which is 30 strawberries. 3 strawberries is on 1 portion on each plate. Therefore, you will look at 3 strawberries out of 30, and that's your 1 in 10, which is already more lenient, because you're less likely to find. There is even an opinion of a Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg, who is quoted by this Bezikas Mozan Dalokha of Rav Raya, who writes, and he's quoted in the Hebrew volume on page 168, and there he says, 1 in 10, he says, it's not really the way we've all been discussing. 1 in 10, he looks at rice, grains of rice, which can become infested. He says, I take 10 grains of rice. And he says, 1 grain out of 10 grains. And if there's no insect in any of those 10 grains, then there's definitely no problem. But his view is a solitary view. It's a view which, you know, in practice, you'll never ever have any problems with any food if you use that criteria, Rav Goldberg. And so his leaning, the heter, is already a bit stretched. There are some other views which have some heterim. I mean, if you look at the Aruch HaShulchan in Yeridah Siman Kuf, Yud Gimel to Yud Ches, he talks about when insects are mixed up with vegetables and they're not readily visible or removable and you've got great difficulty in identifying them, then he will apply the principle of Taruvas, of being mixed up, and Taruvas there's a principle of Rov, or 1 in 60. We don't want to get involved in all the principles of Taruvas, sometimes the Yovesh B'Yovesh, Min B'Mino, it's 1 in 60 or 1 in 2. But he says, then you might be relying on a Heter, because it's all mixed up and you can't identify it easily. The problem with that is there is an inyan called Berioth. A Berioth is a creature or one single identity which has chashivus. It is something important because it's got its own identity, and a Berioth is not batel b'shishim. It's not nullified 1 in 60. Just like you find if an egg is laid on Yom Tov and it's mixed up with other eggs, so you can't eat any of them, afilu ve'elef, even 1 in 1,000. Why? Because it's a dolosheshen matiri, because after Yom Tov they'll all be allowed. So there's a principle that 1 in 60 does not apply with Beit HaShanol de Beyontov, and it's mixed up. In the same way, a Birya, it's mixed up with other things because it's got Hashivos, it's got importance. You can't rely on the principles of Taruvos. However, he says that you might rely on the view that if the Birya in any case is something which is despicable for you, who likes eating insects? People feel repugnant at the idea of eating insects. So he says you can't therefore give it the subject, the title of Birya, because why should you give it Hashivos when you don't want to eat insects in any case? Everybody finds them repulsive. And then, yeah, okay. So then there's another view. Rav Shlomo Kluger writes, he says in his Tuf Tam Vadas, or Chaim Tuf Chaf Gimel, he says, if you take your first three samples and they're all okay, then you can assume that all the rest are okay. Even though you're not going into the 10% bracket, and you might not even be in the 4% bracket, if you find three spells out Chazoka, and therefore you don't have to worry about checking all the others. And this was also a view brought down by Rav Aaron Kotler. However, it does conflict with the Rashba, whom we quoted earlier, that anything which is Midiot Hamotzor, you should check. Even though it's a Din Darabonon, you should do it. And because it's possible to check, it's there, it's in front of you, just like the lungs of the animal are possible to check, are easy to check relatively, it's Motsui in front of you, therefore you check it. You should go that far. But the questions which we're going to ask now are, what about the strawberry jam? Right? Thank you. We brought samples, Henry brought samples in, certified by London-based in, Wilkin and Sons Limited. But the chances are is that if you visit the factory of Wilkin and Sons, most of the workers there will be Romanians and Bulgarians, and they might not have much idea about the problem. And strawberries and raspberries, I mean raspberry jam, our fridge is full of it, you know, these are high problem products, you know, highly infested. All right, you might soak them in insecticides and in pesticides, so you can feel grateful that there's not likely to be infestation, though you might be worried about Rav Shlomo Amar and the incidence of cancer coming from pesticides. We don't know, but it's possible. So what do we do? Is this checked? The truth is, it's not checked. So how can you eat it? Especially if strawberries and raspberries come into the category of two red stars, it's muchzak, then how can you possibly eat strawberry jam or raspberry jam? And then what about smoothies? What if you want to liquidize into a puree, or into a blender, your raspberries with other fruits? And you go into, I'm not advertising anybody, but certain kosher kadassi takeaways, you can buy fruit soup. Now what's in that fruit soup? Strawberries, raspberries, all blended up. Are they fully checked? All right, because yes, sounds so holy, but I wouldn't trust some of their workers. So how can you eat these things? They got a heksher on them. And what if you come to the simcha and they're serving a vegetable dish made out of broccoli, a kugel made out of broccoli? Broccoli is a very high-risk kind of food with its florets. Some people I know only eat the stalks. Highly nourishing, wonderful food, but it's problematic. So how do you manage? What if broccoli kugel is made? There's no way you can check it. So the Shulchan Aruch in Yeredel Simon Kuf talks about this burial problem, that it's not botel afilu be'elef, that it's never nullified 1 in 60, even in 1,000, but the Shach in Siv Kotlov says, la'chukhe nistrasek o nechtach. But we exclude from this din of burial if it is chopped up, it is melted out, if it's, in a way, it's no longer identifiable. The general principle of 1 in 60 is nishbach, where something like the bit of milk which falls into the meat soup. You can't trace it. You can't identify it. So there's no way you can pinpoint it. If you can pinpoint it, okay, then you'll take it out. But because you can't pinpoint it, this is the principle of Taruvos Botel B'Shishim. And an insect is so small, so the chances are is that it will easily be Botel B'Shishim. Yeah?
I was reading an article, I can't remember where it was, it must have been one of the Jewish newspapers, that in the olden days, when you harvested honey from the yeah. beehives, they'd be full of bee legs and bee yeah. wings and...
A lot of Poskim write about honey.
Really?
Yeah, a lot of Poskim write about honey. We'll stick there to principles, yes?
Is that the principle of frozen? Frozen vegetables, like frozen broccoli. I mean, the insects wouldn't be able to survive.
Frozen insects are not allowed to be eaten.
No, but isn't it easier to clean?
Yeah. It's easier to clean. You can get frozen broccoli with a heksher, which requires minimal supervision, and you don't have the muchzak, but you should give it a visual check. But if it's crushed up, then you can't check it. There's no way. But then you get out of the problem because it's no longer a burial. And a burial, once it's crushed up, is nullified 1 in 60.
Is there not a difference between the strawberry jam, which is made for the general market, and something like a broccoli kugel, which is made for the Jewish market?
Yes, but the principle is the same, that once it's crushed up, and you can't identify anything, then everything is botel b'shishim.
Does that mean that if you make a broccoli kugel for yourself, that you boil up the broccoli, and you then mash it, and then you add eggs or whatever it is that you, and matzah meal or whatever it is that you add to it to make it into your kugel before you put it in the oven, that because I'm going to eventually mash it up, I don't need to check it.
Right, one should still check it, and one shouldn't say, it's going to be bottled in any case. There is a din, ein mevatlin isto lechatchila. If on the outset you say, I'm going to flavour this meaty cholent with a drop of milk, it's bottle anyway, it's bottle b'shishim, that's completely forbidden. You're not allowed to eat it. Ein mevatlin isto lechatchila, the rabbis made this rule that you cannot be mevatel in this, even though one thing is nullified, 1 in 60, that's the dievet. That, you can't help it. Okay, we're in that situation. But from the outset, to actually nullify something intentionally, that's not allowed. So do we say that there is a din of ein mevatlin isto lechatchila with the broccoli kugel or with a strawberry jam, or do we say no? I know that there may be bugs in it. All right, I've done a check. So the Taz writes in Sif Kotten Zayin, he says, if you've done a reasonable inspection, you don't find insects, and your intention is simply to make this fruit soup, or to make this broccoli, or to make this jam, and that's the recipe. You're not intending to be mevatel isto lechatchila. You're not intending to say, whatever insects there are, they will be nullified. As that's not your intention, then the final product is allowed on the basis of botel. So your fruit soup is okay. And many kashrus organizations rely on this principle. And it's the same with your yogurts. You have strawberry yogurts, raspberry yogurts. You know, you can't identify any insects in those in any way whatsoever. You don't know how much they were checked, but everybody virtually has these yogurts in their fridge, and they don't think twice about eating them. But you might be digesting insects when you have these products. So you don't have to check them, because if there is something in them, it's botel. And even if one can check, there's another hefzer, which is the Piskei Teshuva. He says, "Da'afim efshar, rakshu tircha namishari." Where you're in a situation where something may be nullified, but it's such a huge bother, though most poskim won't rely on it, where he says, "Tircha, it's such a huge bother, don't worry about it." Why? He's relying on the principle of rove, on the principle of bittul, 1 in 60. What if you're a guest at somebody's house? And there we're not talking about stuff which is mixed up. where you've got your kiggle or your yogurt or your jam. What if you're a guest in a house and you're worried about, you know, there's parsley or dill in the soup? They're serving lettuce here. You might be embarrassing your host a bit when you start lifting up your lettuce to the light and checking it. And it's in a way saying to them, you know, I don't trust the kashrus of this house, I'm using it. How far do we go? I mean, they're serving a broccoli kiggle, fine. What about coleslaw? I mean, the cabbage which they grind up, I mean, it's not really cabbage with mayonnaise, it's mayonnaise with cabbage. It's so soaked in the stuff. You buy in all the kosher shops your coleslaw. Cabbage is a risky vegetable. There may be, it's a milhamot soy certainly, there may be insects in that cabbage. But there's no way you can check that coleslaw. Again, you have a heter here on the basis of it being nullified. And even with a parsley or dill in the soup, it's mixed into the soup. You can't see it. So you don't have to worry so much. All right, if there's a plain salad with large pieces of lettuce and tomatoes and you're worried they haven't checked the lettuce, so you'll just eat the tomatoes. Without offending anyone, of course. So the Yeridah in Peidala says, of our official, if you did cook mixed together, below Bedikah, without any checking whatsoever, im yocho livdo, bode. If you can check it, you check it. Bim lav, if you can't check it, mutter. That's the Shulchan Aruch. It's okay. And the Shach says, if you can't check at all, mutter yesh lahokel in these circumstances. And Rabbi Yashiv actually brings this down, that you can rely on this without having to check. A salad just with mayonnaise, you can't check it, no problem, he says. So even if it's miut hamotsoi, which is really between 10% and 50%, according to most, there's no need to check. And what is this heter based on? Because remember we spoke about the lungs of the shechted animal. Well, what if after the Shemitah, they take the lungs out, put it down, and the cat comes along and nips it away and drags it off, and you haven't got your lungs? Can you eat the animal? The lungs can't be checked. So the halacha is, we still say it's kosher. Why? Chazaka. It's okay. If you're able to check the lungs, then you should check the lungs. But if the lungs go missing, we still say you can eat that animal. And on that, this heter is based. So Rav Osher Weiss, in his Sefer Shutz Minchas Osher, he gives a number of svaras to justify the leniencies which could be applied when it comes to infestation in vegetables. That's not to remove the fact that we said that vegetables should be checked where possible. And there are methods how one can do this. But if for some reason there is a problem, you're a guest in somebody's house, it's not practicable. So he brings first of all the Rashbot in Chelek Aleph Kufyut Gemel of the din of chazoka. If one cooks something without checking, there is a chazoka that means to say the chances are 51%, that there's no problem. And if there is a problem, we got the din of taruvos. Then he talks about sfeika, a doubt of a doubt. Maybe there was no bug in the food, number one. And number two, if there was a bug in the food, maybe it was nimuach, maybe it was crushed or mixed up or disjointed, that it's no longer a burial, it's no longer a full creature. And brings this from the Beis Yosef as well, in Siman Pei Dalet Pei Tes. There's a chazanish, a very strange chazanish, which I was surprised to come across, in Siman Yud Dalet Osvov, who says, v'nimuach shenispatel ein chiluk, if something is no longer a burial because it's cut up, it's broken, it's melted, there's no difference, famous Mayach Bekadera, whether it was chopped up in the saucepan, Machmas Chom Abishal, because of the heat of the cooking, or famous Mayach Bepiv, or if it was broken up in your mouth, Al Yedei Le'isa, by means of chewing. V'choshen is Batla Mimenu, V'choshen is Batla Mimenu, it's a bittul. So the Chazanish is saying, if by mistake you get that insect in your mouth, you're chewing it, and you've broken it, and as you've broken it, it's no longer birya. Therefore, the din of Torah supplies. All right, you don't want to swallow it, but if you do, you might be worried about your health, you might be worried about parasites in your stomach, but you don't have to worry about the halacha. Great. There is another opinion Rav Osher Weiss brings down, Shemo Shelo Shortzu Adayim. Maybe the bug is not fully developed properly as what you'd call a berya, as a bug. It might still be in its background caterpillar or egg form, and therefore it won't be a berya, and therefore it can also be bottle. His svara number 5, it might be so small that although you might just about be able to see it as a black spot with the human eye, although you can't identify it as an insect, that might mean that it hasn't yet got the chashivos of a birion. That a chashivos of a birion is more than what you just see, but it's something a little bit more than that. And then there's another teshuva he brings down, another surprising piece of information. The Shuk Shivas Tzion, he was the son of the Noda Behuda. And the Shivas Tzion in Simon Kafches talks about the principle of misasek. Misasek we usually hear about in Hilchas Shabbos. If you accidentally lean against the light switch, that's not even called the shogeg on Hilchas Shabbos. Misasek means you just happened to move in that direction and you switched on the light. You had no idea what you were doing. You didn't know. And, you know, at least with a shogeg, you didn't know it was Shabbos or you didn't know it was a melacha. But misasek is you might pick up a plant from the ground which you thought is detached but was attached. That's misasek. So he applies this same idea to insects in food. That when you are eating your food, nobody wants to eat insects. It's repugnant to everyone. And as that's the case, it's a misasek when you are eating that insect. It's just a very surprising thing to say, because the Pesukim can bring down 5, 6, it's sorry, minatora, you must eat bugs. Okay, alright, maybe there are certain bugs that people like eating. But he says, if there's no hanor, who has hanor, who has benefit out of eating a bug? And therefore, he says, it's not such a problem. And he talks about rice, and there's a doubt if there's an insect in it. There's a doubt that whether that insect is still fresh in its 12 months of life, because after 12 months that the insect has died, interesting thing for frozen food, we say it's not called an insect anymore. Ka'afro, it's like dirt. And thirdly, if the insect was there and it's live, it may have escaped. And he says an amazing expression. He says, don't bring chumras to people which can involve them in great expense. And that's how he leans towards these heterim, which is quite remarkable. This is the Shivas Tzion. I can give you a copy if you like. Simon Kavches, he was the son of the Noda Behuda. And so many things he quotes are quoted in the name of the Noda Behuda because they seem to have worked together on things.
So the Noda Behuda came out with a very makel fat halacha about food, didn't he? The processed food, where a goy is making an item of processed food and he happens to put in a very tiny amount of trace without intending to be machshel the Jew, just that, because that's the way he makes it, and it's not, completely not, you can't taste it, you can't tell it's in it. He says that's kosher.
Well, 40 years ago I worked with Rabbi Cooper Zatzal on a sort of kashrus list, because there was so much confectionery flying around which definitely wasn't kosher. I found sweet wrappers in this shul and I brought it to his attention. So we decided to research the subject. And there was one item, I won't say which because now it's no longer on a list, but there was one item where they wrote to say that there are trace amounts of animal fat or gelatine in this, but they stressed it's trace amounts only, and Rabbi Cooper said it's okay to eat. So times have changed a bit since then. It's become more complicated in the food industry with emulsifiers and so on, which might not be called ingredients under English law, under Trade Descriptions Act, but there are some very good kashrus guides issued by the London-based DIN. Anyway, it's a huge subject. We've covered what I wanted to cover, and I'll just end off with a story which happened with the Chofetz Chaim when he came out with his Sefer Shmiras Haloshen. When the Chofetz Chaim published his Sefer, what you may talk about, what you may not talk about, what is evil gossip, what isn't, somebody said to him a remark. He said, after seeing this Sefer, I really can't say anything anymore. I can't open my mouth. There's absolutely nothing I can say. And he said, no, on the contrary, before you saw my Sefer, you couldn't really say anything. Now that my Sefer is out, you can verify what you're allowed to say and what you're not allowed to say. Now you can start talking again. And it's the same with vegetables. With vegetables, when you find out the problems of infestation, which can be quite magnificent and enormous, you might think, I'm just not going to bother eating any vegetables whatsoever. The truth is that now you've got publications which explain to you what you can do, how you can check, or when you have to check, or when you don't have to check, now you can actually start eating vegetables and nourishing yourself, well, perhaps without pesticides. Thank you very much.